to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
When you go to the mailbox, Sue Giacobbe, you don't always want it to be a bill. Sometimes you want it to be a surprise.
Correct.
You know, sometimes you want it to smell good and look good, like we do here on the Edge. Hello, Brains, and welcome home to the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. From the land down under, down in Australia, we have Sue Giacobbe. And Sue has been through a lot, Brains, and she's going to help bring us up to speed. First, let's start with her accolade. She just graduated from NLP. She got her neuro-linguistic programming. I'm going to ask you a little bit about that because I want you to pull back the layers. I know what it is, but maybe my brains don't. She's also a thriver and survivor of domestic violence. She really helps women get rid of those limiting beliefs, that I can't conversation that I'm having in my head, which is valueless. And she also works in the industry as a caregiver. And she's going to give us some tips because taking care of someone else is exhausting. Yeah. And if people lie and say that it's not, that's not true. And so, you know, what are the limits? What are the boundaries? How we should pace ourselves? And so forth and so on. So welcome her to the Edge, Sue Giacobbe. Hi, baby.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me here, April. I'm really excited to be doing this with you.
Well, I'm excited to have you. I'm so proud of you, all of the ladies down there. This must be the season in South Australia because you are just blossoming like lotus flowers everywhere. You know, you've got all these great award ceremonies. You're being published in different magazines. You're graduating. You're just doing a great thing down there in Australia. Plus, you're free.
Yeah.
you can get out of the cage and go and do something, because I tell you, we can't do nothing here.
Yeah, I know. And we were just saying with my husband this morning how fortunate and blessed we are that, you know, we do live in a country and in a state here in South Australia where we can move around freely. Yes, we're being careful with you know, certain things, but we're not confined, which is amazing. And yeah, and we feel for you because it must be a tough going, you know, for you.
It wasn't handled right from the onset. And now we're trying to do damage control, but now it's really embedded in our psyche. It's really gotten into our brain, you know? And so I want you to tell us a little bit about, you know, your history. And then I want you to jump right into what in the world is this NLP?
Okay. All right. A little bit about me. So I am a coach, a life coach, and I also run workshops and facilitate change predominantly for women. I have had some males, but predominantly for women. And that has been, I guess, a passion that has been mine for a very long time because I love the potential that's in each and every one of us. I believe we are born an amazing being of gorgeous light that radiates, and then stuff happens in life and we kind of get dimmer and smaller and we shrink and we try and get invisible. And so my thing, my joy, I guess, is when I see the women that I work with flourish and blossom. So where I started, so this has not always been that way for me. Where I started going back many years ago, I married very young. I was about 17 when I was married, 18 when I had my first child, and then I had three kind of a year and a half apart. My marriage wasn't the best, and it was quite an oppressive relationship, and then it became abusive, both verbally, mentally, physically, emotionally. And it got to the point where one day, after about 10 years, one day, all of a sudden my ex-husband put his hands around my throat and was strangling me. The worst part about that was not that he had done that, because it had happened before, but that I had three of my children there, and my four-year-old came between us to try and protect me. My nine-year-old was screaming and tugging at her hair. And in that moment, I zoned out and I made a decision in my mind, they were never going to see that again. And that was the moment for me that was like, I've got to go. They can't see this again. And so that was the beginning of my new journey.
All right, dial back just a little bit. Why didn't you leave sooner before that happened? You said this was a reoccurring situation. Were you trapped? Were you there? You know, financially, you couldn't leave. Did you not have any family support? Were you fearful of his life, like he was going to, you know, hunt you down and track you down?
Yeah. So a number of things. One was my age. Two was my background. I came from a very conservative Greek culture, which was all about keeping the family together and being, you know, I was raised to be really a submissive wife. That was my duty. And so the conflict within me, because the child within me was like, let me out, let me play. However, everything that was happening, every time I wanted to play or wanted to be me, I was crushed. And so slowly, slowly, it's like, you know, when they talk about, you know, boiling, I don't like this, you know, terminology very much, but boiling slowly, you don't feel the heat initially. So the little things, because he would be really charismatic and he'd be great at showering me with gifts and this and that. And so there would be this cycle that we would go through. And so all the good things I tried to hang on to, and I tried to hang on to the marriage, for the children, for community, for my church, you know, all of those things. And the other thing is, I never said anything to anyone because I wanted to protect him. I didn't want people to perceive him as a bad man. So 10 years kind of was, it was ramping up. So the more I said nothing, the more it would ramp up until that point. And yes, financially, I didn't have a job and I didn't have property. I didn't have anything. Everything was in his name.
Wow. Okay. So you were suppressed. You were held down.
Yeah.
Someone put a knee on your neck and cut off your wind.
Yeah.
And so when you decided to break free from this, what was your strategy? What was your plan of action?
I actually had no strategy, because it was like do or die for me. Wow. Because before that, I was starting to have thoughts of, if I was dead, I would get out of this. So I didn't have suicidal thoughts, but my only, I felt so trapped and so silenced that I thought the only way out was if I was dead. So when that day happened, that kind of tension was in the air all day and all night, and he was kind of on the prowl the whole night. In the next morning, he left to go and do some stuff, and I thought, I got to get out now. I rang a taxi. I grabbed my kids, and that wait for the taxi was the longest wait of my life. Wow. Because I thought, if he comes before the taxi takes me away, I may never get away. So I jumped in the taxi and went to my sister's. That was my plan, and then I thought, I'll work it out from here.
Bravo. And so now you are thriving. You have moved that part of the chapter of your life, and now you are in love again. How did you find love again? Weren't you afraid?
It's really interesting, because it was almost like the falling in love freed me up again, because I recognized something that I hadn't experienced before, and it was like the child in me was like really hungry for it. So probably, you know, the thing that I would say is that I didn't take enough time for me to just do me.
Right.
And that would be my advice to people, is take time to find you, to remember you, who you are again.
Right.
Before the complexity of another relationship.
Okay. Because again, you can't love anyone until you actually love yourself.
Yeah.
You had a lot to edit, filter. You had a lot to go through.
Yeah.
So you started started on the path of self-exploration, empowerment, thriving, moving, and you started into NLP. Explain to my brains, what is neuro-linguistic programming and how does it work?
Yeah. So neuro-linguistic programming is all about, if you look at the three words, which is neuro, and that's about our nervous system, our brain, our mind, and how that interacts with our body. And then you have linguistic, which is about our language. So it's also about our internal operating system, the habits of thought, unconscious, you know, conscious, that lead to our behaviors. And the programming is the way that we record our past experiences, and this is how our thoughts and emotions affect all areas of our lives then, because we do life through our past experiences. Mm-hmm. And then putting that together, neuro-linguistics programming is all about really how we communicate with others and with ourselves, so the things we say to ourselves, and the way that we perceive others' communication to us, because it's through the lens of our experiences. And right. So in neuro-linguistics programming, we learn techniques and strategies to overcome those thought patterns that keep us trapped in old beliefs that no longer serve us.
Mm. So, what do you do? You compartmentalize this, you know, you shift this somewhere else, you break it apart. How can you really use this to overcome trauma?
So for me, if I take my example, I had a lot of fear stuff, and my fear was as basic as staying alive. And then it went even deeper for me. It was, I don't trust myself to keep myself alive because of the situation that I felt I had put myself into. Mm. Right. So in that state, I'm giving away all my power.
Wow.
Because then my safety and my security depends on others.
Okay.
In working with those thoughts, those beliefs that I had, and working through and going backwards to see where that, I guess, that pivotal moment was, and then reframing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because we make that the truth when it was maybe one situation. So that we make that our complete truth that we live through in the rest of our lives. Right. So then forever, wherever I go to a restaurant, I where I sat was really important, because I'd get an anxiety attack about, is the door behind me? Because I can't see what's coming at me. Right. So it was like,
we do that in the African American community too. I don't sit with my door back to the door. I need to see who's coming in and what's going on.
And where's my exit? So I'd have this exit. Where's the exit? Yeah. Where's the exit? If something happens, how can I get out of here fast enough? So everything in life was, how can I get out of this fast enough? So you're on, you know, high alert all the time, which then affects us, our physical health and well-being as well, because your body cannot stand that much adrenaline. So what it is, it's about shifting that thinking. And the reality was, so for me, when I look at the safety thing, I'm like, well, I'm 58 now, but, you know, I was 56 when I did this little experiment. I'm 56 and I'm alive. So clearly I'm doing some things that are right. Right. Let me find what those strategies are that I've done in my life and focus on those, not on the one or two things that were circumstances that I've now made them to be the truth.
Okay. So how do you keep yourself on this high? And the reason why I ask this is because happiness is a drug. Happiness is a high. People are always chasing it. What is going to be the next thing? Is it going to be a new car? Is it going to be a new dress? Is it going to be a new job? Is it going to be $100? Is it going to be a new nail polish? Is it going to be great sex? What is the thing that people are chasing? Why do you think they just can't be content? Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's so hard for people just to be content?
Because we're looking at external validation all the time, mm-hmm. rather than internal. So happiness, true joy and happiness, which is this is, you know, my work is around finding your true joy within you. Because true joy and happiness, when we connect to that within us, that doesn't matter. That doesn't mean stuff doesn't happen around us. It just means in that storm, we're able to find that place within us that is the joy and the happiness within us, no matter what our circumstances are. That doesn't mean we're not going to be sad. That doesn't mean we're not going to get upset. That doesn't mean any of those things. It just means we don't sit in that forever. We don't make that our everyday way of being. And when we look externally all the time, those external hits are short-lived.
Right. They're a quick fix.
They're not sustainable. They're like the Band-Aids that we put on a wound, which is festering underneath. So you've got to find a bigger bandage every time.
Wow. Wow. And it's still open wound.
Correct.
It's still open wound. So why do people still live, do you think? I don't know why they still live in their pain. That's the hard part. That's the hard part. You know, I'll meet a recovering alcoholic and the first thing they say, hi, I'm Bill and I'm an alcoholic. To me, they're still living there. I don't feel that they've really cracked the shell and been able to, you know, immerse themselves into a different experience. Because your experience is going to be your experience. And we are the thinker of our thoughts.
Correct.
You know, so you have to be able to process this. And it seems like a challenge to me. You got your work cut out for you, honey.
Lucky I love it.
Yes, lucky love it.
The thing is that I truly believe, April, that it is possible for every single person to find that. It's not that some people can have it and some people can't. Each and every one of us can have that. It's how much do we want it? What are we prepared to sacrifice for it?
Right.
Do we want to face some hard yakka? It's like you can't build abs without doing the work.
Oh, I know.
You can read the book about building abs and go, wow, I'm inspired. I've read the book. But unless you do the work, you're not going to get the abs, right? And so it's the same with our brain. It's the same with our emotional content. If we don't do the work, it's not going to happen. So we can have one session, two sessions, 20 sessions, 50 sessions with someone. Unless we're prepared to take it on as a commitment to ourselves on a daily basis until it goes from conscious to unconscious, it won't shift permanently. So it's like when we learned to drive a manual car, you had to think, I've got to get in the car, I've got to put the keys on, I've got to shift the gears. But then after years of driving, you don't even think about it.
Right.
You just do it.
It becomes automatic.
That's it.
Can you use this same type of philosophy in every area of your life? Because some people may not have a relationship, you know, with their partner problems. They may have money. They may have weight. They may have excruciating pain. Can they use these same techniques with NLP to help assist them and aid them in getting through those challenges as well?
Absolutely. Any work like NLP, like mindset stuff, like, you know, the model that I use, any of that work that is around shifting and the neuro pathways in our brain, because that's all it is. It's like we've got these neuro pathways that are going, and that's the habits we formed. Right. We can shift those. It's like once upon a time they thought if somebody had a stroke, they could never use their arm again, they could never speak again. What they discovered is the minute they started to try and recreate and visualize that they can use their arm, they started to create new neuron pathways.
Okay.
Consistency is the key here. Keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And then one day it's the unconscious stuff that's happening that you forgot even when it became from conscious to unconscious.
Wow. That's a great segue because you work with people that have challenges and that are caregivers. Mm-hmm. And I'm a caregiver. And I tell you, it's right now it's more than a notion. I'm looking at support groups because I've never experienced, you know, this to watch, you know, to watch someone go through this. And it's very, very heart-wrenching. And you know what surfaces also is that you're looking at your own immortality. You're looking at the fact that, you know what, damn it, this is going to happen to me. You know, yeah. I'm going to have to take this medication, and who's going to be there to wipe my bottom, and who's going to be there to prepare my food and to check my medications and all of that. So it's a lot, and it's stressful, and it's tearful, and it's hard work. What are some suggestions that you have for caregivers?
Yeah. So the first thing is exactly what you said about connecting with support groups, and finding other people who you can vent freely without feeling guilty, because sometimes it's like, I am sick of this. Okay. I'm just exhausted. I don't want to do this anymore.
But can you say that? Can you say that out loud, Sue?
Yeah.
No, you no, can. No, I mean, don't get me to get emotional, but I mean, can you say those things and not feel guilty?
In a group where other people are feeling the exact same way, it's almost like permission. There's a space where you can actually say, yeah, this is hard. Yeah, this is like draining the life out of me. And as much as I love the person I'm caring for, sometimes I'm like, oh, just give me a break. I just can't do this. And I've run groups of support groups like this where the women have come together and it's like they support one another, and one day it'll be one of them that's feeling really low and the others are the supporters, and another time it'll be another one because of whatever's going on for them. But it's the only place that these women can come and say that without feeling they're going to get judged, because everybody in that group knows exactly how they feel.
Right. Right.
And it was,
it's heavy. It's really,
it's heavy. It's really heavy. And, you know, I cared, partly cared for both my parents for a period of time. And then my dad passed away. And when my dad passed away, I was working in a, you know, in an education in a school, and I ran a team of five, and my hours were huge. They were long because I did community development. When my dad passed away and I went back to work, I was sitting in my office and I thought, oh my God, I can't do this. I cannot do this job and care for my mum now, because she had a lot of health issues, and I went and resigned. And so I gave up that job to care for my mum. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, now I can start my own coaching business, because that'll give me the flexibility of caring for mum. And, but the first year I immersed in all of mum's health issues, I lost my identity just in a year, just in 12 months. And I was running, you know, a team of five. So all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, this is just consuming every bit of me. Everything about me now is my mum's pills, my mum's doctor's appointments, her ups and her downs, her blood pressure, her this, her that, her food, her, it was just mum. So we get lost in that. Having a support group helps us to kind of remember that we're not alone, but also do, if you can, another activity that's outside of that, that takes you completely away from anything that is just about caring.
Okay.
And
so again, I'm going to start crocheting. I'm going to have someone on the show that's going to show us how to crochet.
Beautiful.
You know, that, or, and I'm rewriting another book, so we have that to look forward to.
Beautiful.
Well, dialing back, what would you tell that 18-year-old Sue with those three, four kids, what would you tell her right now?
Yeah, that she's amazing, that she's a beautiful soul, and that she came here to be a gift for others, because that's what we are. We're here a gift for one another, and to shine brightly and live large.
I like that. I like that, large girl.
Yeah.
And dream the impossible dream.
Absolutely. And that's the living large, because everything was the opposite for me. Everything was about keeping me small. Even from before I got married, don't study something that's going to take you away from being a wife and a mother. Don't do anything that's going to make you too big and loud and shining brightly.
Right.
And you know, that was my personality. I'm like, I'm living it now. Yeah. But that was shut down.
The people want to turn down your light. They absolutely do.
Yeah. And so I started to become invisible because it was safer to be invisible and quiet in my world. And I didn't know I had a choice to get out of that until I was forced to get out of that.
Wow.
So we have choice. The choice is ours. What happens around us happens, but we get to choose whether we want to stay a part of it or we want to remove ourselves from that.
Right. And so that takes a leap of faith and a lot of courage.
Yes.
Good support system. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you. You know, again, brains, she's in South Australia. Hey, South Australia. I love y'all.
Hey.
I love you, baby. You know, she can touch you all over the world because now this is a virtual world. I mean, you can be in Istanbul, you can be in Israel, you can be in South Africa. It's just a point and a click. And we need to know that, again, thank you for that validation, Sue, is that it's okay to vent and not feel guilty.
Yeah.
You know, and be around other people that understand exactly where you're coming from. Because when you suppress these emotions, it's, you know, it's like a domino effect. And the only person that's going to end up tumbling is you.
Yeah, yeah. And I did. I got really unwell when I finally just was like at my tipping point and then everything went well and I started to relax is when I got really unwell.
Wow.
Because my body just went, oh, I can relax now. Pam.
Right, right. It just plummets on you. So tell me, please, how to get in contact with you, Sue.
Yes, so you can get in touch with me by email, which is sue@suejiacobi.com. And you can get in touch with me by Facebook, which is Sue Giacobi. And you can get in touch with me by on my website, which is, again, suejiacobi.com. So I've kept it really simple. It's my name. And so it's easy to find me. But also they can, you know, if they can't connect with me because none of those work through you, April, are you happy to pass on my
details?
Yeah.
At the end of the video, there's going to be your information and I will tag all of your information on all of that because brains, I want you to have a different experience. I want you to think a different thought.
Yeah.
I want you to feel the feels. I want you to feel the fear, but yet do it anyway. That's why I do this podcast. I'm not doing it just for shit and giggles. Okay. I could sit here and jaw jack all day long about nothing, but I care about you, you know, and I knew that it was a gift that I had from a very early age was to be a communicator, was to be able to be that conduit to share that information. And I want to share it with you. So I want you to go back and listen to some other edgy conversations here on The Edge. I want you to subscribe to everything on the planet. We are on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I want you to connect with Sue, have a conversation with her, you know, and if it's not a good fit, because sometimes it's not, you know, we have to keep it 100.
Absolutely.
So many people in her network. I mean, that South Australian network, you guys are tight, you know, and she will, you know, facilitate or direct you to somebody else or another group that can help you because she's been there, done that.
Yeah.
And got the coffee mug. Did you get the coffee mug?
I love my coffee mug.
I love you too. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Sue. And come back and keep me informed what's going on. The more I hear about this NLP, if I get a little free time, I want to see if I can take a course. I don't want to do an online course. I want to be in the room.
Yeah, in the room.
It's a different experience.
It really is. I loved doing the course in the room because you're constantly brainstorming ideas, problems. You're working through the strategies that you can use. And I love connecting with others, you know, when I'm running and doing a course that way. So I love that. But yeah, if you get a chance, I am sure there are courses there. And I don't know at the moment, are you doing any face-to-face training there, April, in America?
You know, if I know a million gazillion people, so I can get like some one-on-one.
Yeah.
Do that. But a group setting, you know, and a little talk therapy in a group, because I love to listen, not only talk brains, I do listen. I love to listen, and I like that information poured into me. So I'm really trying to loosen up. I'm going to get my shot here in a couple weeks, and well, probably next week. And then I should be, you know, ready to go, you know, back and mingling in society. I can't wait to come down there and see you guys.
I can't wait for you to come here.
Well, you know, I came to Australia with Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
And that was a great trip, but I just really didn't. Now it seems like I could just have a party because I know so many people down there that's been on my show. It's crazy good.
You've got a whole community here.
I do.
Really waiting.
So, and I would love to see all of you, you know, present your absolute best. And if you ever come to the United States and you need someone to host a venue, I got you.
Okay. I'll be there. And can I just say, April, for, you know, people who are not sure where to start with someone. Because I know for me, I was stuck until the first person that I went to that helped me start to get unstuck.
Mm.
You know, so a coach, or, you know, a friend, someone that just can be, you can begin the process with. Because when we're stuck in that maze, we don't know how to get out.
Right. But see, the thing of it is, it's been so much fear injected in you that you are afraid to trust.
Correct.
You know, and so that you've got to break that barrier too. That's why I said you got to be in your feelings. You got to feel the fear, yet do it anyway. Everyone is not a monster. There's a lot of support groups that can help you. I will also put the link to the domestic violence hotline. Yeah. You know, there's, again, with COVID, people have been have to stay at home. The person that's been the abuser is there all day drinking and drugging and, you know, putting pressure on you, your kids. The rate of suicide is going up through the roof, the drug abuse, the alcoholism. But you know what? It's a vortex. And it's just like a hurricane. Everything is spinning out of control. You know, then it lands and then it dissipates. Brains, it will get better. It will go away. Right, Sue?
And you know, our prayers are with you and our thoughts are with you. If you can stay united with those people that can, you know, if you nurture and support one another and you get in the good vibes with one another, that'll carry you through. And if you know of someone that's going through a difficult time, if it's an abusive situation, check in with them. Just keep checking in with them.
Right. Yeah. Be there for them. Let them know that there is somebody that you can trust.
All right.
I bless you, and I thank you so much for being here with me on the edge. I just love my guests. Grace, take care of yourself. And if you can't take care of yourself, try to take care of somebody else. How about that?
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Grace.
Bye.